Well, hey there, come on in. We're just about to start. Welcome to My Wife the Dietitian, a fun weekly podcast about nutrition and healthy lifestyle. I'm Rob, and together with my wife Sandra, we invite you to join us on this informative and entertaining journey through the complex world of healthy eating.
Join us each week as we strive to help you with transforming your overall health and relationship with food through up-to-date, evidence-based nutrition information. Do you suffer in silence with colitis? Embarrassing and painful symptoms can really have an impact on quality of life. When you're dealing with intestinal bowel disease like colitis, food and nutrition cannot be understated as a key factor to health. What are potential trigger foods, and what vitamins and minerals may be nutrients of concern while living with IBD? Tune in to our discussion about colitis and what to eat.
Enjoying the show? You can help others find it and enjoy it too by giving us a 5-star rating or review. If you feel like reaching out to us with a question or comment, you can send us an email at mywifetherd@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit our website at mywifethedietitian.com, as well as our social media pages. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Enjoy the show. It's Rob and Sandra, and this is My Wife the Dietitian. Hello, Sandra.
Hi, Rob.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. We're going to address a listener question today. Actually, it's not just one listener. Quite a few people have asked about us talking about this, and I have counseled people in the past about it. So we're going to talk about ulcerative colitis, and mainly, what do you eat and what diet for ulcerative colitis? Which really there isn't one diet, but that's the topic.
All right. Can we start with what is it? Because I don't really know.
Right.
I'm sure I'm not alone.
Of course. Yeah. Good question. It's a common question because ulcerative colitis is one of the types of intestinal bowel disease. So Crohn's is one and colitis is the other one.
Okay. So IBD, that's intestinal bowel disease.
Mm-hmm.
And IBS is something like related to that too?
No, it's different. That's irritable bowel syndrome.
Oh, but it's all bowel kind of. It's the same area. That's what I thought. But we're not talking about that today.
Right. Ulcerative colitis and Crohn's is quite significant diseases that affect people for the rest of their life. So they're pretty intense. There's not really a cure. There's treatment. But ulcerative colitis is similar to Crohn's in terms of symptoms, but different.
Okay.
So Crohn's can happen anywhere from the mouth to the anus, and then colitis is in the large intestine.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And it affects the different type of mucosa in the intestine. But I want to talk mostly about diet.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the stats and talk about the symptoms, like how do people get it, and the role of nutrition and triggers, common deficiencies that people might have if they are living with colitis, and some of the common diets that are used and lifestyle to help.
Yeah, sounds good.
So with intestinal bowel disease and colitis, the onset is age 15 to 30 typically. Men and women get it.
Okay.
But it can really happen at any age. And it's been a recent increase in incidence, and Canada actually has the highest reported incidence in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that, do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, there's environmental triggers. It is considered an autoimmune disease, kind of like multiple sclerosis or lupus or other autoimmune diseases. So
interesting.
It's like inflammation of the bowel.
Right,
so
right.
Remember we did the episode on anti-inflammatory diet?
Yep.
That was episode 19, I believe, way back there.
Yeah, way back.
And it's not like a regulated term or like a term that is known widespread in terms like anti-inflammatory diet, but it includes foods that tend to be helpful and can help reduce inflammation. But if people want to hear about that, they should go back to episode 19, because that was a really good episode that we covered the anti-inflammatory diet.
Yeah, it's actually one of our more popular episodes.
Yeah, I bet, because
it seems there's a lot of people are listening to that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are living with inflammation, chronic inflammation, and also right of colitis, because the colon is infected, inflamed. So colitis, any itis, remember we talked about diverticulitis, right, and right. diverticulosis. That was in episode 80. That's also inflammation. So it's the inflammation of the outpouches in the colon. So this is a different thing. Ulcerative colitis is a different disease than diverticulitis or Crohn's.
Okay. I'll have it all figured out by the end, I'm sure.
Well,
I'm still waiting.
It's a tricky one. It really is. There's triggers in, like, so a lot of the patients that I came across over the years were, they had a flu or a cold or some really major illness that kind of triggered the colitis. And that was the first time they had it diagnosed, is after some sort of illness where their immune system's really weak, they're susceptible, and they started getting these symptoms. And then the symptoms are blood, like actually having blood, passing blood.
Like in your stool, kind of like.
Yeah, but passing blood. So if that happens, definitely seek a doctor, health professional. Don't live with that, because that can be quite dangerous over time.
Yeah, no doubt.
And some of the other symptoms are diarrhea or pain, lots of pain, bloating, gas, blood in the stool, and mucus. So lots of blood and mucus in the stool. A lot of people have these symptoms for quite a long time without having it properly diagnosed. And it might take, you know, lots of different tests and colonoscopies to actually get a proper diagnosis.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it could be a variety of different things.
Remember we talked about celiac disease, episode 40?
Yep.
Yeah, and gluten-free living.
Right.
Well, similar symptoms.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and similar symptoms with Crohn's.
Huh.
So it's really tricky, and IBS, really. I mean, IBS is more of a, it can be intermittent diarrhea, constipation, but it's not as severe, and ulcerative colitis is quite a severe chronic condition.
Right, okay.
That people live with for the rest of their lives. And there are ways to manage it through medication. A lot of people have surgery and diet. So that's what we're going to be talking about. And is diet the cause? They haven't found that diet's the cause, but it could be implicated.
Like as far as triggering the symptoms?
Yeah, like it could contribute and influence the development of it, because it is a high incidence where people eat a Western diet.
Right, I see. Which is why it's more prevalent in Canada, because it's we eat that North American diet here, a lot of people, right?
I think there's a link also with vitamin D deficiency. I think there's like 1 in 3 Canadians have low vitamin D.
Hmm.
And we just don't get it in the winter months because the latitude and it's a sunshine vitamin.
Right.
We did a whole episode on that.
Yeah, we've talked about that a few times, but I don't know how many people would make the connection between ulcerative colitis and lack of vitamin D.
Yeah, I think it's a myriad of different things that are going on, but the fact that we don't get enough vitamin D in our food supply and from the sun in the winter months, it kind of puts our system at a lower immune state, and then we're more at risk to develop autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis is a good one that I can mention, or lupus or colitis. So there is this link. It's not for sure cause, but it's something that I talk about all the time, is just try to get enough vitamin D, because you want to keep your immune system strong through the cold and flu season.
Yeah, exactly. These lifestyle connections, do they cause the colitis, or do they just trigger the symptoms to come out?
Yeah, diet doesn't cause it, but it could contribute and influence the development of it.
Okay.
So they don't really know. There's a family history component, genetics. It's an immune system dysfunction. The trigger events could be an infection, like some sort of cold or flu, like a really bad one that just can't get rid of, because your immune system's probably weakened. Smoking can be another trigger to develop colitis.
Okay.
And geography. So the northern, like Canada, is the highest incidence of ulcerative colitis in the world.
Interesting.
100 out of 100,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm glad someone asked about it because, well, not one person, but as I mentioned, we've had a few people ask about it because it is a question, you know, what do I do with diet? And diet is, it's individualized and it depends on what's going on. So if you're having a flare, meaning you have active disease, you're having those symptoms, then you're going to eat differently than if you're trying to, if you're in a remission and you're just going along living and your lifestyle is good and things are pretty calm and settled, you're going to have a different diet. You're going to be eating differently than if you're having a flare.
Oh, interesting. Okay. But I'm guessing you still have to be careful of what you eat so that you don't cause a flare.
Yeah, I think that's what people think. There could be triggers that could cause a flare, like caffeine for some people, really spicy foods. A flare could just come from not getting enough sleep like day after day. And maybe you're working out all the time, or maybe you're trying like intermittent fasting and you're not getting the nutrition. You're not getting the building blocks, the fuel that your body needs to function and keep strong. So then that makes you weak and susceptible to having this flare. And also we've talked about the microbiome and the gut. There's that mucosal layer that is protective to the inside. I mean, it's like, it's kind of like how our skin protects us from the elements of
the environment.
The environment.
Yeah.
And our gut and the GI tract and the mucosa layer in the large intestine is the same thing. So if there's some weakness there, or we talked to Projecta in episode 73, she has Right Nutrition Works, her podcast, and we talked to her all about the leaky gut, and she helps people with colitis and Crohn's and all the different gut dysfunctions that can happen. So ulcerative colitis is like that too. I mean, if your gut microbiome is not working like it should and things are out of balance, then that can be a trigger to a flare.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Projecta's, the episode with Projecta was really good. There's a lot of information there. So check that one out too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's just, it's so important. Nutrition is such, it plays such a huge role in our day-to-day living and just our health and wellness. And I don't know if people think about diet and nutrition and food as a priority in keeping their immune system strong and their health and wellness. And it's so important because for people that don't have health because they have a chronic condition they're living with, they know how important nutrition is and lifestyle for health. Because when you don't have it, it's just like the sleep episode we did. Because when you're not getting a good sleep, you know how important sleep is.
Totally.
And it's the same thing with any chronic disease. And basically ulcerative colitis is a chronic disease that people live with. And once things aren't working well, you realize how important our health is and how important nutrition really is.
Yeah, how it factors into the whole big picture, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I had one client years ago. I remember she was in university and she was working really hard, you know, studying and staying up late. And she was on a fasting type diet, like intermittent fasting. She was working out a lot. She'd wake up and barely have breakfast. I think maybe a tea in the morning and get going and not even eat, and then just kind of run on empty and just work and study. And she just, because life was too busy to, and she kind of was trying to control her weight. And so that's when for her, she got sick and then she developed symptoms and then it ended up being colitis, ulcerative colitis. And now it's something that, you know, it's such an awful disease that people live with. I mean, think of like people suffer in silence because think of the symptoms.
Yeah, there's just so much discomfort.
Discomfort, pain, just like, you know, if you're having bloody stool, it's just like it's hard to feel like you want to be intimate. It's you feel very vulnerable. You can't go out to social occasions, like social outings, because you feel like if you're in the toilet, like if you are going to the bathroom 10 times a day, and you know, if you go to an outing, you feel like if you eat, you have to go to the washroom. Like that's what happens when people are in a flare. Like, wow. It's brutal.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked to patients where they are at their wit's end and they're asking their doctor for a colostomy. Like they want to have surgery to get rid of that portion of the bowel that is causing so much problem for them, because people have to bring change of clothes because they have accidents, you know, they're incontinent, and it's just like the quality of life is so miserable. It's brutal. Like having colitis is such an awful condition.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very nice at all.
No, wow. No. And you know, working with people that it's a similar symptoms when people have colon cancer and they're going through radiation treatment, chemo, or if they've had surgery, they can be going through similar discomfort, pain, and similar symptoms and suffering in silence. It's brutal. And I think part of what I'm going to talk about later in terms of lifestyle and how to help manage your condition and your health for forever, part of that is support groups and having a community of people that so you don't feel alone. You don't feel like you're the only one living with this disease and these symptoms, because you're not. There's communities out there. There's support groups. There's online chat rooms. There's ways to get help. And in Canada, it's actually an online, so it's global, but badgut.org is the Canadian Society for Intestinal Research, and it's a wonderful resource. It's got videos, it's got community support. The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation is another great support for people, and there's different local groups too in different communities, so seek those out. It really helps in terms of just not feeling so alone.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I bet there's a ton of online resources if you dig around, right?
Yeah, definitely. So people that do have ulcerative colitis could have deficiencies. So common deficiencies, if you're having blood in your stool, so you're losing blood, so you're probably pretty weak. You probably have anemia. You need iron. Probably a supplemental iron. So that could be a deficiency that people have to be aware of. If you're having chronic, loose, frequent bowel movements like diarrhea, you are likely becoming deficient in certain minerals like zinc and selenium. Potassium is another one. And as I mentioned before, vitamin D is something that all Canadians need to supplement with through the winter months. And people with autoimmune diseases like ulcerative colitis should definitely be looking into making sure they're getting enough vitamin D. And calcium is another one, because there's a link with living with colitis for a long time and developing osteoporosis. So you're more at risk for having weak skeleton and developing osteopenia and then osteoporosis as you get older, because it is all connected with the vitamins and minerals and our diet and our malabsorption. If you're having symptoms of diarrhea, you're probably malabsorbing your nutrition. So this is all part of it.
So when I hear that, sort of what comes to mind is like, okay, I need to make a shopping list and go out and buy calcium supplements and zinc supplements and vitamin D supplements. And, you know, because a lot of us think, okay, that's the easy answer, right? And is that something that we should get tested for to see if we need those, or do we just want to increase those levels in our food ideally?
Well, hopefully you're working, if you have ulcerative colitis, I hope you're working with a healthcare professional, quite like a team.
Yeah,
basically.
Ideally, right?
And then so with that, you get an individualized approach to what your lifestyle and diet and all those things that you might require in terms of vitamins and minerals. But we're going to talk about balanced eating and trying to get your nutrition through food. Like food first is great.
Yeah, and for sure.
I mentioned vitamin D, though, is a supplement we all need. So, and then if you're having a trigger or like a flare, then you might have to change your diet temporarily. And that would be for the duration of that inflammation and that flare where you're having symptoms and you might have to, you know, rest and relax and really, you know, sick days. It's all part of it, right? Sure. And for people that are having that, then the hydration is key, like making sure you're getting enough fluid and electrolyte-based fluids and broth and maybe some smoothies or, you know, the oral nutritional supplements, but also low fiber. So usually taking a lot of the insoluble fiber out. So having more low fiber diet, the white bread, the white rice, trying to just eat foods that aren't so hard to digest. So lean proteins too, like eggs and chicken, like lean meats, plant-based.
You want to eat lean meats?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You need protein.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're healing. It's kind of like if you had a wound, you need to make sure you're getting enough protein to help rebuild healthy right. cells and tissue.
So that's what protein does, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And all the vitamins and minerals, and you get those through your, you know, if you're having a flare, then cooked vegetables are usually better tolerated than raw broccoli and things like that. So cooked and canned fruits would be better probably than like apple skins. And
they're a little softer usually, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like they actually in the hospital, it's called low residue diet. Some people are on that for temporarily. Also, there's the low FODMAP diet that was developed in the University of Monash in Australia. And it's pretty common now. The people know about the low FODMAP diet. And it's usually temporary too. And it's pretty restrictive. So we'll have to have a whole other episode on that. Maybe get a guest in on that. But
like an Australian guest would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. FODMAP. Let's talk about the FODMAP today. No, it's like Scottish. I got to work on my Australian.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. Carry on.
That's okay. Yeah. So just usually nut and seed butters are better tolerated when you're having a flare than the actual nuts and seeds, like with the, you know, that are really hard to break down. For some people, like beans aren't well tolerated if they're having a flare.
It sounds like you got to pay attention to your, like, this isn't 100% the case for everybody, the symptoms, what's going to work, all those things. So everybody's different. You got to sort of trial and error with yourself by the sounds of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But these are some things that maybe could be triggers for you. So things to maybe watch out for, right?
Yeah, exactly. And generally speaking, the hydration is really important to keep well hydrated. If you're having loose, frequent bowel movements, you're losing lots of fluid that way. And the electrolytes can get all wonky too. So it's important to get, you know, to have that rehydrating drinks and the broth and in addition to water. So some of the lifestyle factors to help manage colitis, what do you think?
Well, you've already mentioned a few, like just having good routine, I guess, good sleep.
Routine is actually really important for people, especially an eating routine. That really helps because mm-hmm. people get like gun shy of food. Like because they've, you know, the symptoms are so brutal, they don't want to eat. You know, you almost
yeah,
like,
I can see that.
Yeah, you don't know what to eat. You don't want to eat. So they just don't eat. And then that's worse because you actually, it's best if you can kind of keep on a fairly regular schedule with eating so that your gut knows what to expect. So it's like that helps the food be better tolerated if you eat kind of on a regular basis. And small, frequent meals and snacks are usually better tolerated than just eating once a day or like a big meal.
Right. What about dairy? Where does that fit in? Is that a good or bad or?
That's a good question. A lot of people that have diarrhea for whatever reason, because we've talked about lots of different cases that people get diarrhea from like IBS or Crohn's, colitis, diverticulitis, all those different reasons, they can develop a secondary lactose intolerance.
Oh, right.
Because they lose the enzyme, right? They lose that lactase enzyme to help break down the milk sugar. So if that's the case, then yeah, milk wouldn't be tolerated, or a lot of foods that have lactose.
Yeah, like a lot of dairy related products, cheese, butter, yogurt.
Well, it's not across the board. They have different levels of lactose. So a cup of milk has a lot more lactose than a piece of cheese.
Right.
The cheese is usually better tolerated for most people, not across the board. Yogurt is usually better tolerated because it's fermented, but you can still get low lactose or lactose-free yogurt.
Right.
You can get lactose-free milk. You can get lactase enzymes to help break down the milk sugar. Or there's tons of plant-based alternatives available now. So we did our very first episode was all on the milk alternatives. So oats.
Do you want me to rhyme them all off?
Yes, please.
See if I still remember them. No, I'm not going to do that. But you got to go listen to it.
Yeah, episode number one. Rob did a fun little jingle. And
I set the bar high. After that intro, I'm like, whoa, that was pretty good. What am I going to do for the second one?
Yeah, I want to hear some more songs out of you.
Yeah, I know, right? Holy, I've been lazy.
What are some of the plant-based alternatives?
Oh, there's hemp milk, rice milk, or organic milk and cream, soy almond buttermilk, booby milk, and steamed. just to name a few.
Well, okay. None of those.
None of those count?
I'm just joking. I would say most people's go-to number one is almond that I hear about, but soy, oat are good ones. Hemp milk you mentioned. Cream is definitely has lactose because it's
dairy. Oh, I know. It fit in the rhyme, though. It was one syllable.
Right.
I needed a one syllable word.
Cream. Oh, cream. Right. Yeah. Right. You're funny. No. So yeah, that's another thing to experiment with if you're dealing with colitis is to take out the milk products.
Yeah. It sounds like it's a lot of, like I said before, a lot of trial and error, sort of seeing what works and what doesn't. But it's nice to have sort of a basic list to start with.
Yeah, and definitely symptom tracking. So just have a journal and write down for a week, write down or longer, write down what you're eating and what your symptoms are. Like just, it just helps to allow you to see patterns of like, oh, when I eat this, I get diarrhea, or, oh, when I eat this, I get a lot of pain. Oh, this, I'm not tolerating meat. That's a big one. Meat is not well tolerated. And especially processed meats like sausages and bologna and, you know, deli meats.
Yeah. Hot dogs, lunch meats, all that stuff.
Yeah. Those aren't well tolerated at all. And they're not great to begin with. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The tracking, I think, is probably really important because it's not like just trying it once and you feel good. So therefore, you're always going to feel good. It might be, there might be other factors influencing the outcome of that. So it's like Sandra said, it's good to track it for what you said, like a week or.
Yeah,
probably the longer the better. You're going to get more accurate results. And
and it's good to take that to your healthcare professional, your physician, if you're seeing a dietitian or whoever you are working with to help manage your disease, it's important to bring that along. It helps. Also, meditation is huge in terms of helping with stress and anxiety.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. It's just meditation isn't necessarily, I heard someone talking about this the other day and they said meditation isn't necessarily like sitting like in a yogi position and doing that whole thing. I mean, meditation could just be going for a quiet walk in the woods without your phone, you know, like just you and nature and allowing you to be like to clear your head.
Forest bathing
or going for a walk on the beach or just like sort of removing yourself from all the things, all the stimuli that cause you to feel stressed. So whatever situation you can put yourself in, and for some people like sitting in a yogi position is how it works. And that's great. I can't do that. My mind wanders too much. So, but walking on a beach or something like that is great. So whatever works for you to get into that sort of meditation sort of space to decompress.
Absolutely. And next on the heels of that is sleep. So good sleep hygiene, maybe refer back to our sleep episode way back, because that's a good one about how to have more regular, good quality sleep most nights, because that's really a big factor in your lifestyle and your health.
You know what really worked for me, and this started late in life, was going to bed earlier. Huge difference. Like I used to go to bed later, like midnight, 11 o'clock, midnight. and I'd get my 8 hours sleep. Now I'm going to bed at like 9 o'clock and I am like good to go at 5 in the morning. I feel fully rested. I've had a good sleep. I didn't toss and turn all night. And I wish someone had told me like 30 years ago that that would work, because I always just thought I wasn't a good sleeper and I would feel tired when I woke up. But going to bed a bit earlier, like if you're having problems sleeping, give that a try, because that was instant for me. It was amazing.
Yeah. And we talked about with Alden Carroll on Peaceful Practices all about healthy sleep hygiene and turning off your phone a couple hours before you go to bed, or, you know, turning off the TV or any kind of blue light, because it is stimulating to the brain. And so that's really helpful too, just to keep your immune system strong and keep you feeling good. And that's all part of healthy living with colitis. Also exercise, just regular exercise. And, you know, there's a balance with all of these things, like, you know, too much and too little. So there definitely could be too much exercise and too much like high intensity. Don't give your body a break, and not allowing your body to rest and repair. So, you know, a healthy amount of exercise, but not too much. And that pacing is really important. Well, not, you know, like pacing yourself, but, and, you know, walking is one of the best exercises we can do.
Exactly. I mean, exercise doesn't mean hitting the gym 5 days a week and doing all the high intensity classes and all that. It could just mean going for a walk every day. You know, that's a really good start.
Yeah.
So because some people think that, oh, if I can't get to the gym, then, you know, I'm not going to do anything until I can do it, like all or none. So they don't actually start, but just start by going for a walk or whatever.
Kinda, absolutely.
Yeah, moderate.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, just the development of like getting colitis, it can put people at risk for developing an eating disorder, because you are you know, so focused on what you can and can't eat, and, you know, starting diets and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And also just all the dietary restrictions, the fear of eating, the food aversions. And then when you're actually in a remission, you know, just trying to prevent a relapse or a flare. So there's just, you know, there's so much to it too, like with colitis and having that healthy relationship with food. But it's hard. I mean, it's really hard for people.
Yeah, I bet. There'd be a lot of panic, anxiety. I never thought of that side of it, but you're totally right.
Oh, yeah. I used to see it all the time. And just, you know, those symptoms are brutal, like the nausea, the vomiting, the diarrhea, the bloating, the pain, you know, weight loss, unintentional weight loss. And that happens because you're having nutrient deficiencies. You're not getting enough nutrition. And then you can, you know, lose weight. And it's not necessarily good, because you're probably losing muscle, especially if you're malabsorbing nutrition. So, you know, there's so much to it. And that's why I mentioned at the start how important nutrition is and the role that food plays in our life.
Yeah, for sure.
The other, we did an episode on this, and it's so important. Chewing.
Yeah, who would have thought, right?
Episode 15, chewing your way to good health.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the first step in digestion.
Mm-hmm.
And chewing your food well really helps to break it down small enough for better digestion and absorption. And it really is important, because our, you know, our gut, it's just, you know, it's all part of it. And, you know, the taking time when we're eating and savoring our food, being mindful with eating.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's all about, it goes into that mindful eating thing too. And it's another form of meditation in a way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But we do it, you know, at least 3 times a day, most people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times 5 times a day if you're having small meals and snacks, maybe 6 times.
But if you think of comparing it to like, I'm so rushed, I've only got 10 minutes to eat, and you're going to jam this food in your face and you're rushed and the stress and the panic that you're feeling, versus mindful eating where you sit and you just, you know, you smell your food, you feel it, you taste it, you just enjoy it. And you think of how those affect your body in entirely different ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
we're so much in our minds so much of the time, and thinking, 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 and watching things, media, just involved in traffic, whatever. It's all in our head, and we forget about our body and our like digestion and and you know, the whole thing we talked with Alden Carroll about rest and digest. It's a different, you're in a different state than when you're fight and flight. And
right.
so much of our day is fight and flight because we're stressed, we're overscheduled, we're overworked, we're running from one appointment to another, and we don't have the time to just enjoy and savor.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you eat with colitis? Well, if you're not in a flare state, then you want to try to have a balanced diet. So balanced eating. And we talked about the lifestyle factors, but the food would be trying to get that nutrition through vegetables and fruits. You want whole grains and you want some protein. And depending on what your triggers are, what foods that you know that don't work for you, you try to fit the food into those categories. So in a meal, if you think of that plate, the plate ratio, you know, you need some protein, you want some vegetables and fruits and some grains.
Okay, yep.
And with that balance, you're going to get the vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients and flavonoids and all those healthful anti-inflammatory foods that we talk about. So to get more specific, so, you know, fish is good for omega-3. So with the, we talk about the SMASH. What are those ones?
Oh, that one's, what's the first one?
Sardines.
Oh, it is sardines. Sardines, mackerel, anchovies, another S, salmon, and herring? No, halibut. Yeah. Halibut.
Herring, no, actually.
Herring.
Yeah. And they are the smaller fish, less mercury buildup, and more sustainable. So those are the good ones. They have really high level of omega-3. So definitely that could be part of your protein. And when you fry fish or have it deep fried, like fish and chips, you kind of negate the goodness. So it's better to have your fish in a different form, like canned fish or the pouches, or, you know, tuna salad sandwich or salmon, smoked salmon. Those are a better form than fried fish.
Fish in a dish.
Yeah. Next, I think we're going to talk about bowls, like poke bowls and Buddha bowls.
Oh, like next week or something, you mean? Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So also, you might tolerate vegetables that are cooked or stewed or roasted or blended, like in a smoothie, better than the raw with the skin and all that.
Right, right. Yeah, we mentioned that before.
But even when you're not having a flare.
Oh, when we mentioned it before, it was during the flare. So you're saying all the time, it might be better to just do that all the time.
Yeah, for some people.
And you definitely can find out, like you try it, and if it doesn't work for you, then you know, right? Or is that a bad, don't listen to Rob?
I don't know. That's a pretty, that's the whole reason people get scared of eating.
Oh, true. Yeah.
If you start having a flare and bloody stool and, you know, the pain and have to, it's a whole vicious cycle.
True.
So it's definitely work with someone and get an individualized approach on what works for you and for your body and your triggers. So a diet for colitis, as we talked about in this episode, this is just the tip of the iceberg. It's just very individualized, and what works for you might not work for somebody else. And so there's no like kind of general recommendations, but overall, you know, having a balanced diet with variety is important. And then you might need to watch the fiber, and you definitely have to make sure you're hydrated, keep the hydration up. It's really important. And remember those deficiencies that are common in colitis and make sure that you're getting the foods that help with preventing deficiencies, or you might need a supplement.
Right. And as well as the lifestyle things, I think those are a key factor too that play in, but you might not realize how it's impacting you overall. But I think it's all part of the bigger picture. So
yeah, let's go over the lifestyle ones one last time.
Sure.
So mindful eating, tracking your symptoms, meditation, sleep, exercise, support groups and community.
Yeah, that's a big one too.
Yeah. And diet, like, and food planning or meal planning.
Yeah. Like maybe your diet's fine and it's some other things that you have to sort of focus on is that are more lifestyle related. It might not necessarily be diet. So have a look at all of those things, I guess.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned this the other day, Rob, to me, that we think maybe a lot of our listeners are already probably eating pretty well. Like we're preaching to the converted, as you called it.
Yeah. I'm just thinking the kind of people who are going to tune into a nutrition show are probably already interested in eating well. And they just kind of want some more information.
Hopefully that answered the question that we got from one specific listener about what to eat for ulcerative colitis, but also a few other people that have asked us in the past. So
exactly.
Hopefully that gives a little bit of a brushes the surface, really.
Gives you some homework to do anyway. You can start doing some tracking and figuring some things out.
Yeah, and looking at resources online, as I mentioned, www.badgut.org. It's the Canadian Society for Intestinal Research, a wealth of information there. And also the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation have some good resources and a good blog too online.
Yeah, right on. So make sure to check those out. We'll link those in the show notes and you'll be able to track those down. And don't forget to visit our website too. There's lots of information there. There's the old blog articles, some of them we mentioned today from some of the guests we had. So there's definitely some information there. Information in old episodes that we've done. So that information is all through the website. You can find that. It's www.mywifethedietitian.com. And if you have questions, comments, ideas for the show, anything like that, you can email us at mywifetherd@gmail.com. We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Feel free to leave a comment, send us a message through there if that's your preference as well. So we are on there, sort of updating those things fairly regularly. And don't forget to rate and review the show. That's really helpful for us. It keeps things moving forward here, puts us in the spotlight so other people can find us and share this information. And I think that is it for this week.
Thanks for the talk, Rob.
No, thank you for sharing your information and your wealth of information. Not just standard everyday kind of information. Sandra's like the encyclopedia here, so it's nice of her to be able to share what she's learned.
Well, I've been working with people for 25 years, so this is part of it. You know, colitis is definitely a referral that I see people in the healthcare system that I've been able to talk to over the years.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing and thank you everyone for joining us today. We will see you next time. Thanks for joining us today on My Wife, the Dietitian. If you like what you heard, don't be shy. Leave us a comment or review and be sure to share our podcast with your friends. If you'd like to hear more, hit that subscribe button. You can also follow us on our social media pages for updates, episode trailers, and other odds and ends. For more info and links on what we discussed on today's episode, check the show notes. We'll be back next week with another informative and fun-filled episode.